Welcome back to the Dog Gone Wrong podcast, where myself and others share their mistakes and help you lift the guilt burden. I'm your host, Sarah Roper, the multi-dog maven. Hello and welcome. Today I have Jennifer Doe, the editor and creator of Edition Dog Magazine. We first got chatting just before the first edition was published. I think it was the end of 2018. I've been proud to be a part of the Edition Dog family since then, and Jennifer shows her Irish setters, Walt and Lily, but I'll let her tell you a bit more about herself. So welcome, Jennifer. How are you?
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, you're right.
No worries.
2018, it's been such a long time.
It has.
You've been a big part of our journey, and I'm sure your followers will know that you write regularly for the magazine, and you come along to our event as well and showcase your skills and share your expertise with our audience. So yeah, thank you very much.
No, thank you, and thank you for coming on. So would you like to say a bit more about kind of your background in dogs? Like, usually I'll have dog professionals on, as in trainers and things like that, and obviously you're not quite that, but you know, your life is now dogs.
My life is now dogs. Yeah, sleep, eat, breathe, anything dog. So I am just dog owner. That's basically my skills. I mean, obviously, we launched Edition Dog 2018, and I'll be honest, my husband and I run a publishing company, and we had magazines in another field, completely different from dogs. And I was getting really sort of, how can I be it, fed up with them. They weren't sort of my passion. My dog Lily came into my life, sparked this massive fascination with, I mean, Lily's always been a healthy dog, but how to keep her that way. Sparked a really massive fascination. Obviously, I'd had dogs before, but I don't know what it was at that time in my life. And I think people say a dog comes into your life at a time, doesn't it? It makes such a big impact, and it's amazing how your life can change as a result. And Lily certainly did. So I find myself suddenly in the dog showing community. Lily was my first show dog, learning lots of different skills. And then I said to my husband, you know, I fancy doing a dog magazine just as an idea to keep me interested in the company as a sort of hobby, meant to be a sideline. Took off, and it was just so well accepted. And I think the reason being is what makes our magazine different is, as you know, Sarah, we're not written by journalists. We're written by professionals and experts. So if you're writing about behaviour, training, nutrition, whatever it is you're writing about, that's what you do for a living. You know, that's because it's so important for us that the knowledge that we share is correct. Now, I've always said to people, you won't necessarily always agree, because all professions can have disagreements or would do things slightly differently. But at least that person that's writing it is qualified and experienced enough to say it. Well, Edition Dog launched in 2018, and it's just became my life now, very much. That's all I do.
And you scrapped all the other magazines, and just, it's now...
They're all gone.
Edition Dog.
Yep. All gone, completely. And that's all we do. And I'll be honest, it's been like a breath of fresh air. I'm not saying the industry we were in before was negative, but the dog world for us is just full of amazing people. I mean, I get to talk to wonderful people all day. I get stories about dogs. I look at dog photographs. I read features. I mean, all my knowledge of everything I've learned about, like, dogs, like, in the way that the magazine puts across has just been incredible. So I'm not a professional or an expert in any way, but I've read a lot since 20.
You know more than most. Yep. Yeah. Okay. So was Lily your first dog then?
No. I was about 12 when I got my first dog. I used to pester my mum and dad for a dog all the time. I used to leave notes under my dad's pillow every Christmas I asked for a dog. And then we got Della. So Della was a Cairns Terrier. She'd been used for breeding. And in hindsight now, when I look back, I think she obviously had lots of litters. When I look back at the time, and I think in those days it wasn't as sort of, you know, a done thing for a breeder to maybe have one or two pups from a dog. And now it's just, I think, but looking back, I think she'd probably had quite a lot of litters. But she was a wonderful dog, wonderful first dog. I can remember driving at the school the first day I got her, and I was super proud. All my friends came up to look at her. Super proud. And so when I first got married, we had German Shepherds.
Okay, did not know that.
And that really came from my husband's, obviously spent 30 years in the police service, so we always seemed to have a passion for German Shepherds. But I'll be honest, we lost two at quite young ages, and we took a long time to recover from that. Last German Shepherd, he was 2.5 when we lost him, which was incredibly young. He had a really rare condition in his skin that wasn't curable, so unfortunately we had to take the decision to let him go. But so after that, we never had German Shepherds after it. I think we just had to move on from that breed, I think. And then got into Irish Setters, so after that, yeah.
So why Irish Setters? Why not another breed?
Do you know what it was? I grew up, and where I grew up, my neighbour had two Irish Setters. And I always really liked them, because obviously I never really had a dog till I was 12, so they all used to like them. And then we decided we weren't going to get another German Shepherd, and my husband had grew up where we live now, and there was an Irish Setter breeder lived here. So he'd seen the breed quite a lot. So when we said what breed would we like, we both suggested an Irish Setter, and to be honest, it was more about the dogs we'd met in the street. And, you know, like a lot of probably people that buy a dog, we probably bought it based on how it looked. You know, yeah, and you know, again, you're talking about our podcast, our chat today is about things we did wrong. I'm not saying I was wrong to get an Irish Setter, because fabulous breed, wouldn't get anything else now. But, you know, totally wrong way to do it, probably without doing the proper research and finding out more about the breed and the requirements of the breed and everything like that. But I'll be honest, we were lucky, because Otto just fitted in with our lifestyle perfectly. Couldn't have asked for a better dog. It was just, yeah, amazing. I'm now, this is me on my fourth one now. I've currently got three. So I've got Lily, Alice and Puppy Walt. So he's 16th month, and he's at the stage where he's just forgetting everything he's been taught so far.
Yeah, he's a teenager.
Yeah, I'm not coming in the house anymore, Mum. You know?
No. No, it's not worth it. I'll do my own thing, thanks.
Yeah, he actually went in the bush the other day. He thought in the garden, he thought I couldn't see him. I was shouting him. And he was in the bush, and you could just see his face. He's thinking, she can't see me.
They are so sneaky. Well, I've got a teenage Labrador at the minute, so I could definitely sympathise. It's just those days where you look at them and you're like, it's as if I've never trained you. You've never known what sit is or wait or down. You know, obviously they do, but, you know, they just look at you, gone out like, what? Does not compute. I'll do my own thing, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I forgot that you'd got Poppy as well. So yeah. Sorry for making that mistake on the intro.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So go on.
He's going to his first crufts.
Yep.
So I've taken the decision to enter him, because obviously Edition Dog has its stand at Crufts, and I've always found it difficult to do both, you know, because obviously when you're at Crufts, you're there from Wednesday set up right through to Sunday evening, and I've always found it quite daunting to try and mix both.
Mm.
But this year, because Walt's qualified 7 times, I'm quite keen to get in there.
Well
so,
done.
So we're going to go along, see how we get on. But it's been a while since I've been on the green carpet, so see how I get on.
Off the top of my head, I can't remember what day is Gundog Day?
We're on Saturday.
Okay, I will come and cheer you on. I'm there on the Saturday.
No, don't do it. Go away. I get quite nervous.
Oh, really?
When people watch me, yeah. I don't, obviously, people watch, but...
Yeah, if you know them.
Just to see us is just a bit...
Okay, I'll steer clear. I'll come and cheer you on after you've finished.
Watch the sidelines.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's really exciting. So, yeah, I'm over the moon for you. You qualified him 7 times, not just the once. So that's great. So when you say that you like most people with pet dogs, they go out and get a different breed to before, or their first dog, they choose them on looks. I've been there and done it myself. You know, I learned a lot of lessons on the way. But what would you say have been the kind of wake up calls and the things that you didn't expect to be Irish Setter things that have been a shock?
And I don't mean this in a negative way, because this is one of the reasons I love them, is an Irish Setter is basically full of fun, full of... I think they've got a wicked sense of humour. I mean, people would say it's naughty. I don't think it's not. I think it's just a wicked sense of humour. Actually laughing, because at the moment, Walt's chewing my slipper out there.
Feel free to go and you know, yeah.
They never grow up. Right, so our older boy was 12, and he went blind with cataracts. So we made the decision not to get the operation, lots of reasons for it. And I'd had a dog that went fully blind before when I was growing up. Adela went completely blind and she adapted so well. Otto was like 10, 11, he started to lose his eyesight, so we took the decision not to. You know, he was completely blind, Sarah, and he would still run full speed down the bottom of the garden. You couldn't see where he was going, but your heart was in your mouth quite a lot because you're thinking, can you actually see? And he would run so fast and he would just turn at the right time to avoid the tree.
You're like, heart in the mouth, like, is he going to face plant?
He was still trying to steal things off worktops. He was still, you know, heading the bin every night. We laugh because our other thing was, Otto, out the bin, Otto, out the bin. You could say that a million times and Otto would still put his head in the bin. But I think it got to the stage he was doing it just to kind of make you laugh type thing. I think you've got to find a breed that kind of suits your personality. I believe all breeds have their own personalities, and within that, there's differences. I mean, even my three setters, there's a difference into how they are. I mean, Walt, for example, is super confident, nothing fazes him, throws himself at everything, throws himself off things, on things. You know, I think I spoke to you before, didn't I, Sarah? I think when I first got him, I sent you an email. Because he's just no sense of risk.
No.
Whereas my
no
girls,
self-preservation.
Yeah, my girls are a bit more, yeah, cautious and stuff like that. And then Lily is just stubborn. I mean, that's just the best way to do it. You know, Lily comes in when she wants. I'm probably not selling myself as a really good dog owner here, because my dogs do actually. They are
but
trained,
you love them all. Cool, but... Yeah. Like, but you love them all. They are, you've said before, they are all different. My three Daxies are like, you know, they're just pulled apart, all three of them. And they all have their quirks, and none of them are perfect. And no. I'm a professional trainer, so yeah, don't worry about it.
I think I'm quite one of these people that I wouldn't like my dog to be a robot.
Yeah, me neither.
I like them to be able to show their personality and to show their quirks. And I think when you've got an Irish setter, you have to let them be Irish setters, because I think if you try and make them be anything else, they're not them then. You know, they're not being themselves. And it's like humans, you've got to be yourself to be happy, haven't you? If you lived in an environment where you couldn't have your own sort of freedom of thought or freedom to do the things you like and behave a certain way, I mean, we wouldn't like to. And obviously, we've got to have boundaries. Mm. You know, we all have boundaries and things like that. And they do have routine and they have boundaries. But within that, you know, they can be themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And I've never owned... an Irish setter. I must stop myself from red setter. I don't want to swear. Well, but yeah, exactly. So for the listeners who don't know, like, most people will call them red setters because they're red.
Yes.
But actually, the correct name is Irish setter. You know, for the owners, you know, you call them an Irish setter. They're not a red setter, which is why I'm trying not to swear. So I've worked with Irish setters. I've never owned one, but from the outside, I see them very much as, you know, the sense of humour, you know, their exuberance, they're full of energy, that they're very similar. I'm not saying they're the same, but very similar to flat coat retrievers, as in mentally, they don't tend to grow up. Yes. And, you know, obviously my heart dog was a flatty and he was my absolute, you know, joy. But there were times where I was like, what the hell are you doing? You know, like, just his sense of humour and exuberance and puppiness. It was like, are you ever going to grow up? No. And that's what I love about you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they're all very different. And I think one of the things I mean, obviously because my three obviously were show dogs and stuff. I think, just touch on what, you know, so the topic we're talking about today is things you've done wrong with dogs. And I think before I kind of launched Edition Dog, before I got into the show community, I was, you know, probably quite typical of a lot of dog owners. You know, you turn up at the vet with your puppy and they recommend that your puppy's spayed or neutered.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I was probably in that, you never really questioned it.
No.
Do you know what I mean? You just took it as well, they're recommending it, it's vet recommended, everybody does it, it's the one thing, it, you know, calms boys down, all this kind of stuff. And I think looking back, I mean, I know from obviously, particularly like my Irish setters, obviously Otto, my older boy, our first Irish setter, he was done very young. I mean, he was probably like 6-7 months old, as vet recommended. And his coat was, it blew out. It wasn't as good quality. It had like, you know, lighter bits, fluffy bits. And I think if you do that to an Irish setter, their coat is so different. And it was only when Lily came into my life, and obviously now I've got obviously Alice, but obviously I was away before Walt came. And yeah, I used to look at the difference in their coat. And it was because it was so obvious, right? It was an obvious sign. I used to sometimes at night feel really guilty because I knew in hindsight what I'd done was wrong. Do you know what?
But you'd done the best you could with the information you had at the time.
And a lot of people do. You can only go with the information you have at the time. Do you know, and there's a lot of new World Animal Health study that came out, isn't it, talking about all the negatives of and I think now you look back, you think, you know, talking about things we've done wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, it's kind of an aesthetic thing with the coat, isn't it, if you're not managing a spay coat. But, like, I totally get where you're coming from. I did the same thing with my flatty. He got done at 7 or 8 months old. He was doing my head in. You know, I didn't know a lot at the time. I was working with dogs, but I wasn't a trainer. I was in my early years. And, you know, I got him done and he kept on growing. So that was a whole other thing. And taking the hormones away made his growth plates keep going. So I had a very leggy dog. But his coat was all right. Like, it wasn't a bad coat. But then, you know, on the other side, I've got Ripple, which is my middle Daxi. She had loads of issues with seasons and things like that. So after her second litter, and she was high risk for having pyometra, so I'd rather have a spayed dog, even though I wasn't gonna breed from her again. I just wanted to keep a natural. I'd rather have a spayed dog than a dead dog through pyo. But I knew it would affect her coat. And I think, and I've had this conversation quite a few times with, you know, pet owners and things like that, and they kind of look at me going out, what do you mean about their coat? Well, with most long-haired dogs, if you get them spayed or neutered, their undercoat starts to go on overdrive and you end up with this fluffy, woolly coat. Some of them worse than others. And if you've got a breed that, for example, you're having clipped at the groomers all the time, it's not going to make any odds because the undercoat is the undercoat, that's it. But like with Ripple, she's got a little bit of like the undercoat bits, which I just pluck out. I've been very lucky with her. But years ago, I got Fern done, another Daxi, and she was this beautiful, sleek coated black and tan, not loads of coat, just a nice amount of coat. And after spay, she just, this silvery undercoat just went on overdrive and it just wasn't nice. And I think that's a really good point to make because a lot of people don't really, I mean, never mind, there's lots of negative health concerns once you get them done. Like, that's a whole other thing. But from a coat perspective, definitely. And the fact that you've seen it with your older boy compared to the younger girls, it's not the fact that they're opposite sexes, it's that one's entire and the other two are entire and the other one wasn't, and the difference in coat. I mean, but I also think that coat is a massive telltale of their overall health as well, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, obviously, I'll not mention obviously what I feed my dogs and things like that, because obviously, it's, you know, I'm not going to go there. I think, you know, I quite often get comments about my dog's coats, and it's definitely, you know, I put it down to that sort of good nutrition, you know, because it's, you know, it all starts from within, doesn't it? And
it does.
I do look back and I think, you know, when I was growing up, you know, we went with my first dog, you went into the supermarket and you bought the typical mass-produced brands, but and you just poured a bowl out, probably never even measured it. Do you know, and thankfully, I think we've moved with the times. And I think, you know, just what you were saying, hindsight's always a great thing, isn't it? And you can sometimes kick yourself for things that you do, but you do things at the time that are A, maybe the best decision you can think of at the time, or B, it's the only option. And certainly in those days, you didn't have the option of all these different types of nutrition for your dog. It was you went into the supermarket and you bought something off the shelf, and you can imagine the brands I'm talking about, you know, supermarket type brands. You didn't have all these different options. I suppose our knowledge wasn't there either.
Mm-mm.
Even if you think about how far on understanding of the human diet has changed, you know,
in that time,
in that time, to know that now we're applying that to dogs and we're actually looking at what we're actually feeding them. So I think for me, I think, you know, it's as dog owners, I think we all, and it's like any, I suppose, parent in a workplace, anything you do in life, you'll always look back and think, I could have done that better. I could have done that differently. But hindsight's
what helps us learn.
Yeah, but, you know, but you can't sometimes kick yourself forever for it.
Mm-mm.
You've got to think, well, I need to move on. And, you know, it's one of these things. You know, I've had conversations about, you know, going into like the magazine stuff about, you know, brands, and people will say, well, why is Edition Dog wanting to work with that brand? Because they're X, Y, and Z. But at the same time, what that company is doing is they're trying to evolve. They're trying to change. They have also sort of then realised that what they're doing isn't correct. So they've taken that hindsight and thinking, right, well, how can we improve? So, you know, it's what I'm trying to say is at some point, you know, as, you know, a magazine or dog owners, sometimes we need to look at companies maybe in a new light and say, right, this company's trying. And it's only through discussions that we can actually change things and then raising that awareness, because, you know, people can go along and do as I've always done. I've always done this. I've always mm-hmm. done my dog that, or I've always had them neutered or spayed. I've always trained them this way. But until you actually then raise that awareness with them and help them understand that hindsight, then we can progress. And any small step we can make makes life better for dogs, doesn't it? And it's like what you do, Sarah, the training world. You look at how far the training world has come since, you know, even in the last 10 years, 15 years, you know, when I was growing up, how you train dogs. I mean, it's
not the same world.
It's a massive change for the better.
Mm.
But again, can we berate the people of the past in hindsight because they were only doing what they were led to believe was the right thing to do at the time?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I'm not talking about people are hurting dogs. I'm just saying, you know, training methods. Yeah,
but at the same time, I think that without that beforehand,
yes,
without that style of training or whatever it was, the work, like the community, wouldn't have progressed. So we're almost standing on their shoulders.
Yes,
it's not nice, some of the things that happened, but someone's got to make those mistakes for others to be able to learn from them.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I was a lecturer for years, and obviously, you know, if you look at like teaching methods, you know, in schools, you know, primary schools, it wasn't that long ago that they were given things like the bell and things like that.
Mm.
Now our understanding of teaching methods and things is completely different, and it's the same in the dog training world.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so teach it. So yeah, if you look at how much the whole of society's evolved, and then obviously the dog world, and I think it'll keep evolving. I think we'll keep learning more as we go on and understand dogs more. And I know you'll know better than me, Sarah, but you know, the understanding of dogs must be quite a constantly changing field.
It is. It's a totally changing field. Just the new studies and scientific papers that are coming out all the time. Even just 5 years ago, there's a lot of stuff that I'll do different now.
Mm.
And then 5 years before then, a lot of different things.
Yeah. I think it changes, obviously, with each dog as well. Because I know when I was, when Lily and I first started our show journey, Lily was so easygoing, although she's now stubborn, but she was so easygoing. And she didn't really respond to treats. Lily really liked, if she'd done something really well, you'd just give her a hug and give her some verbal praise, a tail would go. She loved it. A sort of great time learning, showing. She was so patient with me and all the mistakes I made because she was fine. And then, you know, now I'm on to Walt and he's very different. I mean, how I've had to approach, you know, teaching how to kind of stand and go around the ring is completely different to how I've done with Lily.
Yeah.
Completely different. And yet they're the same breed, the same, all the rest of it, but just each dog is different, isn't it? And I think it's learning to adapt as dog owners as well, isn't it? And adapt your skills, adapt to that to the dog.
Yep, yep. It's training the dog in front of you or working with the dog in front of you, not the previous dog as well, because we carry a lot of, well, I did this with so-and-so, the previous dog, whatever, this is how we did it, we'll try this with the new one, which is all well and good, but when it doesn't work, it's then finding the new ways. Other than neutering, and you know, what other key things in your journey so far with dogs, you know, have you come across, what stumbling blocks, what things like that?
I'm trying to think. I think one of the things that, do you know what, I'm going to touch on the creating
okay.
dogs.
Yep.
And I'm just going to touch on them. Now I had, like I mentioned previously, I had German Shepherd. Our last German Shepherd loved his crate. Loved it. He was in it from a pup, adored his crate, would go in it. Eventually, we just had the door open. He would go in there when he wanted to sleep. It was his space. He'd take toys in there. He'd take treats in there. He'd take things he wasn't allowed in there. You know, it was his space. So when Otto came, automatically bought a crate, put Otto in the crate, and he absolutely hated it. He was destructive in there. And it probably took me not weeks or months or anything, but it took me a bit of a while to think to myself, you know, this isn't, is he stressed out in there? So what I did was I took the decision one day to leave him out the crate, took the crate away, left him out the crate, fine. No damage in the house, no nothing, no destructive behaviour, nothing. And he obviously just couldn't. And I know people say you can train them and you leave them for so long, but I'm not that kind of person. So I thought I would try him out with it, and he was amazing. And I think sometimes for me it's about listen to what advice is out there, try things, but don't be afraid to think that doesn't work for me and that doesn't work for my dog. And people say, you know, put your puppy in a room, put it down the stairs, let it sleep on its own. I've never done that. I mean, mm-hmm. people would probably be alarmed when I get a new puppy. That puppy is in my bed,
yeah,
overnight.
Okay,
and I that puppy's in my bed overnight, and my dogs all have beds throughout the house, but they can access my room at night, and they've got a bed in here. They're not on the bed anymore, but they're on the floor. So I think it's about listening to what's out there. There's a lot of very good advice, but just remember you don't have to take it.
Yeah.
You can try it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. Don't be afraid to think. It's not your failing. I mean, I didn't fail because Otto wasn't in his crate. That crate was not right for that dog.
Mm.
It just
yeah.
wasn't him. He was a happier dog out with it. He didn't need to be in a crate because he wasn't destructive in the house. He was fine on his own. He just got on with it. But my German Shepherd, Blaine, I think he'd have been the opposite. He liked having that safe space.
Yeah.
He liked to be in yeah. his own space. Whereas Irish Setters are very different. They're very family orientated dogs.
Mm-hmm.
If I go into a room, if I'm upstairs and I go downstairs or go into the kitchen, they all follow me. Wherever I am, they follow. So if they can be sound asleep, I go down to make a cup of tea. And it's probably like a lot of people's dogs, they follow you. They like to be with their people. And I think that's what was upsetting for him, was he just couldn't be with his people. He kind of felt like he just needed to be where he wanted to be. And I think, yeah. So, yeah, read advice, find out lots of information, but don't think you're a failure if it doesn't work because it's maybe just not suitable for you and your dog.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to make. Just because the advice is there and you've been given it doesn't mean that that is going to be right for you. And it's something that, you know, I struggled with, for example, writing books and stuff. And, you know, same with articles for you. If I'm going to write out, this is your step-by-step plan to train whatever it may be, I've got to be able to cover as many bases as I can for as many types of owners, dogs, ages as possible. But I also understand at the same time, it ain't going to work for everyone because everyone's different and every dog's different.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, I think there's also something to be said for crate training, for example.
Yes.
It's for a tiny, so like you've had quite a few dogs by that point where you got Walt. So you're experienced in watching for when they want to go to the toilet and, you know, and all those little intricacies. But, and I think it's easier to not crate train a larger breed of dog mm-hmm. because they are, in general, house trained quicker, their bladders are bigger. So, and you've got more gaps between wee trips and stuff like that. When with tiny dogs, tiny breeds, Daxes, for example. I mean, Daxes are not known for being the most house trainable in the first place, and they have tiny little bladders. Now, I'm not saying that every Daxie needs to be crate trained, but it does make it easier because they've got tiny bladders and they're more likely to hold it if they're in a smaller space. It gives you some breaks and then you can take them out so they can go. Yeah. Just, but there is that difference, I find.
You have to do what's right for you and the dog, and that does vary. And again, it'll vary between different breeds, doesn't it? In different circumstances, because at the end of the day, I mean, you know, if your dog's been, you know, destructive at home, or you're leaving your dog to go out to work, and you want to know it's safe and it's crate, it's not going to come to harm, then that's the best decision you make. That's you know, but you're making an informed decision, and you're making the right decision based on the dog. Because, you know, if I'd left this house and Otto had been destructive and been ripping stuff across the house, I would have had to make a decision, no, he has to go in the crate, because for his safety, because of what he might digest when I'm not here, you know, he
exactly
would be
safe
in that crate. So it's about making those decisions, isn't it? But making the kind of informed ones, really.
Yeah, definitely. I think it does come down to safety in a lot of ways. But yeah, it's... for example, Ada the Labrador that I've got, she came more or less crate trained. She was fab. She loves her crate.
Yeah.
But she, just at, like, the last few nights I've had an extra dog staying and he's had to be in her crate, she doesn't necessarily need to be in a crate overnight anymore. She doesn't really need to, but she likes it. So it's just, it's stayed up, you know. If she wants to go in it, she can. But he was staying in her crate. So she slept one night in our room. She slept a couple of nights in the kitchen on her own, loose, which she's never done unless we've been, like, on the road and, you know, away with her. She's not caused a problem because she likes it, but she doesn't particularly need it either. But she's not a particularly destructive type anyway. She never has been. But if she was a destructive type, then I'd been like, okay, I'm getting out another crate for this extra dog.
I think another thing I've probably done, it's not like a big wrong, but I sometimes compare how I'm doing with my dog to other people.
Dangerous.
I'll go back to, I remember I was in the show ring with Lily, and I can remember it plain as day, we were at the Scottish Kennel Club, it was in Edinburgh, and obviously she's in our puppy class, and I looked round and all of her puppies were like doing what they should be doing. And then Lily, I went to move Lily, and she refused to move. She was in the middle of the ring and she point blank, I don't know what it was, she just refused to move. And I can remember I was mortified, I was so embarrassed because I was new to showing, and I kind of thought, I felt that people would be judging me when it's the total opposite. They weren't. People all want to help you.
Mm.
So I remember picking Lily up and carrying her out. I look back now and I think, why did it matter? Do you know what I mean? Because she was a puppy, she was being a puppy. No doubt somebody else would have went in the ring maybe 2 weeks later with a puppy and it would have done same as Lily, do you know?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes not to compare yourself too much with other people. And I think it goes back to when I had my daughter, and you'd hear people saying things like, oh, my baby sleeps all night. My daughter slept 20-minute power naps and she was... Right? So then you start thinking, am I doing something wrong as a parent? Am I not giving my daughter enough milk? Am I not doing this? Am I not doing that? As whatever. But in the reality then, when you start delving into it, and they'll say, my baby sleeps all night, but it's up 3 times in the night for a bottle. You know, no, your kid's not sleeping all night then. So when you hear people saying, oh, my puppy went into the crate, it was first night, slept all night, didn't make a sound. Start questioning that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't compare yourself to that, because, yeah, the puppy might have, but it's not a competition.
It's not. It's not. And every person is different, and every dog is different. And it's, like, I've had easy pups, and I've had nightmare pups.
Yes.
But what I usually find is the nightmare pups are easier when they get to teenagerness. You've got over their main nightmarishness, and by the time they're adult, it's all good.
Yeah.
But if you have the really good puppy, then you usually end up with the nightmare teenager. So for those listeners out there that are thinking, oh, I've got the really good puppy, or I've got the really bad puppy, well, you've got the opposite coming.
Yeah.
That tends to be how it goes. So if you're comparing to your friend's puppy, get ready.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is hard not to compare, I think.
Yes.
You know, I've been there. I think when, I mean, Moss Daxie is now 13 and a half. And I bred him, but I hand-reared him and his four brothers, so I lost his mother in the process, which was very hard. But a trainer friend of mine had one of the pups, his brother, and she was a very experienced trainer, you know, got a good 30 years on me kind of thing. And we went and did a lot of training courses, puppy classes, you know, activities with the dogs together. And I used to do the exact same thing of comparing of, well, why isn't Moss doing that? You know, why I can't. And, you know, of course, logic dictates, well, one, they're different. And two, I haven't got that extra 30 years of experience on my side. But it didn't stop me from feeling totally crushed at times when Moss wasn't as good as his brother.
Mm.
So, yeah, and it is a common one. It really is a common one. And, you know, I see it when I go out and see clients that, you know, that they'll say, oh, my friend's got their brother, or my friend's got the litter mate, or my friend's got, you know, a relation, particularly when they've got a relation of their dog. And they're so good, and my dog's so much of a nightmare. And it's like, but they are different dogs.
Yeah.
We can't expect them to be the same. And I think it's the same with human siblings. You know, none of them are going to be the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll know that from obviously having litters. You can look at that litter and you'll probably see quite early on, won't you, that there's sort of personality differences start to come out.
Mm.
By the time the pups are sort of 10, 12 weeks, they've already got sort of different personalities, haven't they?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that, and a good breeder can match them to the right people.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of see that personality is going to fit with that lifestyle and those people.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are all so different. I mean, Mizzle, she's my youngest Axie, and her six brothers, she was the only girl, so she's got six brothers, same litter. Not only are they so much bigger than her, which you expect some differences between sex, but she's tiny, and they're all really big. The personalities are like poles apart, not only between her and her six brothers, but between the six brothers as well. And it's nice, but it needs to be recognised, I think, by more people that even between the same litter, that you're going to get massive differences in personality and the ways that you're going to train them, the ways that you're going to live with them, their likes, their dislikes, definitely.
Yeah. So what about you? What have been your biggest hindsight moments?
You're turning the tables. I've gone through a lot of them on previous episodes, but biggest kind of quick rundown, I'd say, was my first big dog of my own after leaving the family home, which was Bella. And she was a rotty mix. And with all her allergies, she had a bad experience in a very crucial period of her development with other dogs. She became reactive to other dogs. And I'd started my business at that point. So lots of other dogs were coming and going. And she was okay. But it got to the point where she then attacked a different dog, not one in my care, but where there was no need. She went all the way across the field to do it to an old doddering dog on lead, which is very sad, and then went for my boyfriend at the time's throat.
Right.
And I had to have her put to sleep. Wasn't easy, but what set me on the path to where I am now, and, you know, determined to help others avoid that. But not only did I learn, or have I learned since, a lot about dealing with aggression and reactivity and the stress that comes with being that caregiver of that dog. Also, the health side. I learned so much with her. Considering she was a crossbreed, and people used to say to me, oh, you know, why are you getting her insured? She's a mongrel, she'll be fine. And I did, and I was, what, 18 when I got her? And, you know, thank God I insured her. Because at 8 months, she was chewing herself to bits. And she had a big long list of allergies. And it meant me injecting her, bathing her 3 times a week, taking her down to Liverpool University Vets once a month for skin scrapings and stuff. You know, it was a lot. But it taught me a lot as well.
What allergies does she have?
Grass, fungal spores, certain pollens, flea bite allergy, and there was something else as well. Yeah, she was bad.
Yeah. I know from my that German Shepherd I touched on, he had, I can't remember the proper name, if there's any vets watching, forgive me because I'm going to probably say it wrong. He actually was in the veterinary journals because he had a condition that was only used, typically seen in poodles.
Mm.
And it was at the bottom of their every fur follicle, there's a sebaceous gland that secretes oil into their coat. And I think it's called sebaceanitis or something like that. Again, don't quote me on that. But basically, his immune system thought his sebaceous glands shouldn't exist. So it started killing them off. So we had to do, just when you said about the injections, we had to put him in the bath and put oil into his coat. So he had to go in the bath, he had to soak him with the oil, rub it in, and then he had to sit there for as long as possible while it's soaked in, because you're trying to keep his coat, his skin, oily.
And
we started off doing that, and we were doing that sort of every sort of 10 days, roughly, it would last. And it got to the stage that we were doing it every day, and it wasn't helping him. He was gnawing, he was giving himself open wounds, you know, because there's no cure for it. And that was, yeah. So I've been there. It's, you know, you try and do as much as you can for them health-wise, but there does come a point where you feel that you have to take that really horrible, heartbreaking decision, don't you? And, you know, and it's, yeah, as I've been there, and to have that many allergies is just, must have been horrendous for your dog. And you've probably done everything you could to, especially with being your first dog away from home, you know, you've got sole responsibility for.
Yep.
It must have been tough, you know. I was a bit older when I went through that debate with Blaine, but to do that at 18-year-old, it's your first dog, it would be very tough.
It was.
Yeah.
It was very tough.
And I think the knowledge we've got is so different now. So you probably find now there might have been other things out there for you, but it's going back to what we're saying is you tried everything you could at the time with the information you had, and it's tough not to go back and be too hard on yourself, isn't it?
It is. I thank Bella in my mind every day for the journey we had. She was about 2.5 at the time as well.
Mm.
Because she's helped me to help others and, you know, set me on the path. I wasn't going to work with dogs. I wasn't. I was an engineer. That's where I started, yeah, mechanical engineering.
I was a painter and decorator, Sarah, when I first left school.
Wow. But so we were both in industries that were mainly male-oriented. Yeah. But, yeah, so she sent me on a massive path, but I think she also sent me on the path not just with training and behaviour, but also the interest in more of a holistic way of keeping animals and trying to stay more towards the natural route. And, you know, and then Merlin not long after, which was my flatty, who ended up with a slip disc at 3 and then lumbar sacral disease and spondylosis throughout his life till he was just shy of 11. So, and, you know, never mind all the other dogs that have been around that as well. But it's, yeah, I think that it's not just that, it's the health side as well that's been a massive interest for me, which obviously has been for you, and why really that's where Addition Dog is kind of, that's what it's centered around, isn't it? It's more holistic care for the pet dog.
I mean, it's our magazine is health and well-being. I mean, and obviously for me, a large part of well-being, it's about training, understanding behavior, because that, you know,
mental well-being.
Yeah, mental well-being creates a happy dog. So for me, dog health is about as much as what you put inside your dog to what you put on its coat outside, to how you make the environment it's living in a nice environment. But as part of that, how do they cope within that environment, and how do they fit in, and how do they adapt their behaviour to fit in? Because it's a lot of pressure for dogs to fit in.
It is.
To our human world, isn't it?
Massive. Massive, because this human world must be so strange for them, and how much the human world has changed even in the last 20 or 50 years. And while there's been a fair few generations of dogs within that time, it's not enough to evolve to it. So, you know, they are very tolerant at coping with all of this technology and all of these things that we now do that we weren't doing 50 years ago.
Yeah.
In families, and the expectations on the dogs are so different. So, you know, I do think we don't give enough credit to dogs of adjusting to that. And when they don't quite manage to, you know, adjust very well, we need to have a bit more empathy that genetically or evolutionary, they're not quite there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. like you're saying, it's that empathy and I think a touch of patience.
Mm. You know, goes a long way.
Goes a long way.
Yep.
Yep. Especially, yep. You know that from obviously being in the training world, and I speak to quite a lot of trainers, and they say that, you know, one of the things that they think is quite important for dog owners to have when they're doing training is patience. Empathy and patience, isn't it?
Yep.
It probably goes a long way, I think.
It really does. And because I think that society, in general, we expect quick results, or results yesterday. So when they try and train the dog to do a down, and it hasn't worked the first time of putting a treat near the floor, well, it's not working.
Yeah.
Why isn't the dog doing it?
Yeah.
And it's like, we need to try a bit more, a few more times, and then we might look at changing what we're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do need that patience to be able to, till the dog's got it, and teaching them in the right way. But yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So would you like to, I'm going to wrap it up. So what would you like to tell the listeners, you know, where you're going to be at Crufts, as in not with Walt, but with the magazine? I won't send all my listeners to the ring, don't worry. You know, like what the score is with the stand this year, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, speak about Edition Dog Live as well.
Yeah, I'll touch on Crufts first. So we're in Hall 4. We're stand 102. And if you are at Crufts, so whether you read the magazine or you've never heard of the magazine, you've never read it, whatever your relationship is with us, come along. We do something quite unique at Crufts. We don't sell you anything at all. Come on the stand, have a chat, share stories, see who else you can meet, and we give out tea, coffee, and shortbread.
It was very good last year, I have to say.
Yeah, I mean,
so last, I highly last recommended.
Year, yeah, last year we had, the stand went pretty much for 4 days, and we had quite a nice little community hub going on. We had, you know, CEOs of big multi-million pound companies talking to, you know, dog owners, to breeders, to showers, to agility, to trainers, to, you know, somebody that doesn't even have dogs, to, you know, and we just have nice conversations and chats and stuff like that. And obviously, you can enjoy a tea and coffee and some biscuits on us. But get there soon for the biscuits, because by Sunday, there's not much left.
But I'm going to be there Thursday to Saturday, so I'll make sure I get there. And yeah, I won't be there Sunday when I've run out anyway, so we'll be good.
I want to point out, I typically eat quite a lot.
Well, you're really not to.
I want to go for lunch, so I just tend to eat biscuits all day.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, Edition Dog Live, we've moved the date this year. We're the 6th of July. We're still at the end.
Ooh, I did not know this. I best get it in my diary. No.
We've moved away from the bank holiday.
Yep.
A lot of reasons for it. Some people were saying that it's quite difficult to get there on a bank holiday and things like that. We were away on holiday.
It's usually around my birthday or on my birthday, so I'm glad it's that one.
It's the 6th of July. It's at the NAEC Stoneleigh. It's a super dog-friendly venue, so there's lots of outside space and grass for dogs. Obviously, you have to keep them on leads because there's roads, but there's a lot of outside space for them to have a roam about. We're inside, so if it rains, we're still on. If it's hot weather, we're still on because we can cool the hall down. And it's £14 a ticket. Dogs are free. Kids are free. You get a free printed show guide, and everything inside's free to take part in. And it basically takes a magazine and brings it to life. So everything in the event is about health and well-being. And it's meant to be a nice, fun day out, but at its heart, it's educational. And what we hope is that whether you're an experienced dog owner, new dog owner, professional, come along for the day, get involved, and even if you take home one tiny bit with you to try at home or change something you're doing, or even it confirms that what you're doing is the way to go, that's what we're about. So yeah, it's a fun day out, but it's educational at heart.
It's an amazing day, and I enjoy being part of it, being there. This is year number 4 we're coming up to.
You know what? Yeah. I've been telling everybody this is year 3 coming up. I don't know where my time goes. It is. It's year 4. So, yeah. Year 4. And our first year, as you know, Sarah, was the show that was about 3 years in the making, because we had it planned. It was meant to be April, and then obviously went into COVID, so it was postponed. It went into the August. That didn't happen. It went into the following year. Yeah, so our first year show was like 3 years in the two, 3 years in the making. So we're heading into year 4, and we've got lots of different things happening this year. And obviously, Sarah, keep the day
Yeah, as soon as we get off this recording, I'm going to go and put it in my diary and hope that I'm not already booked.
So yeah, come along, and obviously you can meet Sarah. Sarah's a big part of our day. You do our sort of training and behaviour hub and things like that, and share your expertise, don't you? And meet lots of people. So yeah, you can come along the day and meet Sarah.
Yeah, if you haven't already. But yeah, and not just meet me, but meet lots of different professionals, and you know, have a go with different dog sports with your dogs. And there's usually like canine massage, and you know, there's all sorts. And last year you expanded into another hall, and that, you know, and it's even got like a little fun dog show, which seemed to really draw the crowds, and everyone had such great fun. I invited all my crew last year, which is my membership, and most of them came, and they absolutely loved it. And some of them like travelled from all the way from Kent, and they absolutely loved the day, and they're all looking forward to joining us again this year. So yeah,
that'll be good.
It'll be a good one. Yeah, cool. Well, thank you very much for joining me. I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Yeah. I could talk about dogs forever. So yeah, we'll finish off. But
yeah, we'll leave it there for today. We'll maybe get you on again at some point, so we can do it all over again
all night. Yeah, right, thank you very much.
No worries. Thank you very much, and I will leave it there for the listeners, and I'll be back.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Dog Gone Wrong podcast. If you could do me a quick favour, like or follow the pod, rate and leave a review, and maybe share with a dog owning friend. Let's get the word out there and ensure there is less guilt around the mistakes. Thank you again, and we'll be back next week.